Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
I hope anybody's not stupid enough to write this off.
This is Two Stars, the Nottingham Forest podcast from The Athletic. On this episode, we find out what's happening behind the scenes at the City Grounds, give out a bunch of made-up end-of-season awards, and for the final time, ask, did they really play for Forest? Available for free wherever you get your podcasts and ad-free on The Athletic. This is Two Stars. Hello, listener. Hope you're well. Matt Davis-Adams here. I'm joined by The Athletic's Forest correspondent, Paul Taylor.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I sounded surprised there, didn't I?
Yeah, you caught you off guard there. Nick Miller's also with us. How are you doing, Nick?
I'm all right. Every Thursday, Paul. We've been doing it for a while. You know, just sorry to have kept caught you off guard there, but yeah. Hello. Hello, everyone.
Hello. Good hellos there, guys. We're going to say hello to somebody else next, he said, segueing, as The Athletic senior writer and Forest supporter Daniel Taylor joins us to talk what's going on behind the scenes. Daniel broke the story last week, athletic.com/forestpod to sign up, by the way, if you're not currently a subscriber, that chief executive Yanos Frentzos is considering his position at the club. Daniel, as I say, that was last week. Has anything been updated since then? Is he still considering it? Has he made his decision?
There's not been a massive update since then. Forest are accepting that the story is true, and I think if a man in that position is considering his position, that normally means that he probably is going to leave. Certainly certainly in Greece, there's a strong feeling that he's going to go back to Athens and maybe work somewhere else in the Marinakis Empire. This side, it's still a little bit fluffy, I suppose. There's all sorts of options apparently that are open. One of which is that he continues, but maybe takes a sort of slightly lesser role, which seems a bit strange. So I don't really see how that would help. Another option, which seems even stranger, is that he might go back to Greece and carry on doing it in a dual responsibility, which again, you kind of think, well, what benefit is that going to be for Forest? But I mean, essentially, I think what it tells us is that they are, despite their many sort of flaws, they are very self-critical at the top of Forest. And even while they may project this kind of image that, you know, everything's fine and that we're such a brilliantly run football club, and I think deep down they will be hurt and dismayed and reflective and realise that they have made mistakes. And, you know, I don't think we've actually been above 15th this season. You know, when you think of the ambitions at the top of the football, I mean, if you remember back to that Yanis fell out with Karanka because we weren't in the automatic promotion places. I mean, we're around the playoffs then. So goodness knows what he thinks about the fact that, you know, we've spent the season pretty much most of it sort of in that kind of 16th to 19th kind of position, really, and, you know, a couple of times looked like we're going to get sucked into proper relegation danger.
So Vrensel's been in charge of the club recruitment policy. Would Paul's piece linking Forest with the likes of Dion Charles, Josh Ruffles, Jerry Yates, would that suggest that that's already changed? Because Blackpool, Accrington and Oxford aren't the places that Vrensel's typically shops.
Well, no, they're not. And that's been one of the problems for us. Because I certainly think until maybe the last year to 18 months, we've really not had any expertise in terms of looking at the lower leagues and understanding the benefits. I mean, Tony at Brentford, you know, Forrest were notified that he was available and would be a good signing for us, and we didn't even reply to the person who was making that approach. In fact, I'm pretty sure we were approached more than once. So yeah, it's been it's no secret. It's been. Recruitment-wise, it's been a very, very mixed bag. And not just recruitment, really, but just the kind of decision-making of giving players in their 30s long contracts on big money. I mean, people forget about someone like Heffley, for example. You know, he would have cost about £1 million in wages this season. And any football club that had done a proper medical research or analysis would know he wasn't deserving of a contract. You know, a player in his time of his career he must have been delighted to be offered that contract. But, you know, when you think of the contracts that have been given to Harry Arter, and I mean, Lyle Taylor, I have to hold my hands up and say when he signed, I thought that would be a good signing, and I wasn't, you know, so I can't be completely hypocritical. But then you look at that and just think, well, you look a little bit further into it and you look at his CV and where he was before, and really it seems that we signed him pretty much on the strength of, you know, the fact that he played so well in one game. But you know, a lot of players can play well in one game. You know, what we need is a proper, just some real expertise back there. I hate to use the word overhaul because it feels like Forest have an overhaul every season or sometimes twice a season. So, you know, what happens is the fans tend to get excited. They see these new names coming in as kind of, oh, you know, this must be an improvement. And I think until we actually see what's definitely going to happen with Yanis and the rest of the board and the recruitment team, it's, you know, maybe it's just sort of a bit better to have a kind of a watch this space kind of belief rather than just assuming it's all going to work out in the end, because we've been there now. And it's like, you know, 20 odd years since, how many times have we even looked like we might get a promotion in that time? So we'll have to see, really.
With that in mind, you also said last week that George Sirianos from head of analytics at Stuttgart may be coming in as well. Is there anything you can tell us about that?
Well, just that, really. I mean, there's a bit of confusion. And as I say, Forrest don't really like these things being played out publicly. My information was that he was coming in as head of recruitment. And obviously, the long-forgotten Anigo had obviously left in slightly dubious circumstances. So there was a space available there. Forrest have told me that is not true, which I have to be honest, I'd be interested to see then how that pans out, because my info was pretty good. So I kind of just termed it when I put it out there that it was just a new look recruitment department. So I kind of fudged it, but we'll have to see, you know, the kind of the hierarchy of that department and what does that mean for Francois Modesto, because if Forrest really are going to be completely critical of themselves and look at their work, then, I mean, I put this bluntly, he's going to be very lucky to keep his job when you think of the number of mistakes that he's made and the number of poor signings and strange recruitment tactics that we've used. So there does seem to be, I mean, it makes a change, doesn't it? I mean, normally, you know, basically the default setting at Forest over the last few years and before then with the previous owner was just to get rid of the manager and start to, you know, it does seem like they are actually looking at themselves, which is slightly encouraging. I wouldn't say anything more than that, but yeah, we need some better knowledge in the recruitment department. We're not short of bodies there. I mean, Gary Brazil obviously got a promotion a while back, but you know, we have people there. It's just sometimes I'm not quite sure whether they're all pulling in the same direction, really. I mean, Gary, I would, you know, this is a very much a personal thing, but I still think that he would be a better technical director at the football club than the one we actually have. But obviously my voice doesn't particularly carry huge weight in these things.
Paul, you've written that Chris Hughton wants six or seven incomings and a fair few more than that outgoings potentially. What the club need to do is decide who's doing what above him pretty quickly for that to be able to happen in good time ahead of pre-season starting.
Well, not just above him as well, but you know, they've made a big deal out of having this new European model where there would be a head coach rather than a manager. And it seems like they've backtracked a little bit where Hughton's concerned and he would have perhaps more of an influence on recruitment. And I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing. Perhaps I'm a bit old fashioned, but I think if you're the manager that's actually going to be using that team, using those players and building a team that you think can win promotion, I think you should be the one that ultimately has not just the final say, but perhaps the biggest say on who comes in. So the best thing they could do for me this summer is perhaps just give Hughton more of an influence to say, look, this is the player I want. What do you think? Can we do it? Rather than, you know, perhaps giving him a list of seven or eight players. Here's one from Olympiacos. Here's one from Portugal. Here's a Premier League youngster. Here's somebody that's failed and hasn't played for 6 months. You know, let him pick who he wants and see where that gets you a little bit more, perhaps, and let him have an influence on the team that he perhaps wants to build and you know, see how that works out. Because he's got a track record of success at this level. You know, he's very rarely failed at championship level. He's normally been a success. So trust the man that's done it before.
Yeah, particularly in his second season. Danny, before we let you go, we've spoken about the scrutiny on Rentsov's position. I just wonder about Nicholas Randall and Johnny Owen, because it's quite a small power base at the top of the club. Is there sort of introspection as to their roles? Or is Randall just essentially front of house window dressing and doesn't have much to do day to day other than that anyway?
Well, it's a good question. His role did change at the start of last season, isn't it? Where he took a pay cut. He was on a very handsome contract, and basically he was meant to kind of take a role, a bit more of a back seat, and become a non-exec chairman. Forest never actually announced that, and which was slightly strange. But as it's turned out, I actually believe that he's carried on. I mean, if a non-exec director, normally you would only see them on match days. As it's actually turned out, I'm told that Nick is actually still taking very much a hands-on role there. But the things with he and Johnny Owen, it is very much that Yanis Ventros is the boss. They both are very much beneath him. So really, in terms of like the forward momentum of the football club, I think if Yanis did leave, I think that would be a very big moment really for the club in terms of that. As I say, he runs the place day to day. Nick, you can understand why he was brought in. He's got QC after his name. Everyone at the football club has to put QC after his name, otherwise they get told off. You know, he is front of house respectability for Marinakis. Johnny Owen was brought in. we'll have to see whether Johnny Owen believes that his position, that he is a worthy director of the football club. I mean, that's maybe open to debate, but it's a strange board. There's a lot of, you know, I obviously speak to a lot of football clubs in my work, and a lot of people like Forest. People want Forest to do well, but I get so many people asking me what is going on at Forest, and people do say, you know, how is the board made up in that way, and is that the right structure for the club, and do these people really know English, you know, have they worked in football before, in English football, I mean, because Yanis obviously was at Olympiacos, and are they the right people to get the club promoted? And I mean, the evidence on the 4 years so far, unfortunately for us as fans and journalists that could follow the club, is no.
Sigh, never mind, might be 22 years. Danny, thank you so much for joining us today. I'm guessing you're going to be busy over the summer in terms of Euros and stuff, so well worth people keeping across your output for The Athletic.
Cheers, nice to be on.
Daniel Taylor there, reading him only in The Athletic. Next up today, we're going to give out some richly deserved awards as we look back, hopefully for the last time ever, on the absolute dumpster fire that was Nottingham Forest season 2020-21.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer, if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
So, riffing on Paul's piece, which did pretty much what we're about to, and given it's the end of the season and our final show of the campaign, we thought we'd dish out some Forest-based awards. Here are the categories up for debate. We've got best game, worst performance, player of the season, best goal, best moment of the season, worst moment of the season, most likely to feature in a future episode of Did They Really Play for Forest? Should we ever resurrect the feature? And reasons to be cheerful. Got to be honest with you, listener, a lot of these categories took a long while to find an answer for. Let's start with best game. Paul, you went for QPR at home, 3-1. I heard, on Radio Nottingham that Forest scored one or nil goals in 39 of their 46 games last season in the league. So this is a fairly easy pick.
Yeah, I think they scored three goals in three games. I think that's the entirety of the number of times they scored more than two, so that kind of sums things up perfectly. There weren't really very many high points, were there? There weren't any performances that you look back on and think, wow, Forest were great that day. There were probably two or three games where they kind of clicked into place and did okay and did enough to get a relatively comfortable win, but it probably sums up the season perfectly, the fact that, you know, you kind of had to rack your brains to try and think of what the best game and best performance was. It's been a pretty beige season all round, if we're entirely honest.
Yeah, and I think mine and Nick's choices also kind of sum up the season. I went for the 1-0 win at Preston. One shot on target. That was Lewis Crabbin's penalty that shouldn't have counted because he double-tapped the ball. Nick, you've gone for a routine win at home against a relegated side.
I was just thinking, just before we started, to let everyone behind the curtain a little bit, Matt and producer Lucy also work on the Chelsea podcast, who have reached two Champions League finals this season. So I imagine it's slightly more upbeat over there than that. I've gone with the home 2-0 win against Wickham. It was kind of near the start of Houghton, second win in a row. A few games after, I think Houghton lost sort of one of his first six or something like that. And there was a bit of optimism there. You know, there was a bit of kind of, okay, well, you know, we have got some good players and now we've got a good manager. Maybe something can come of this season. And I think vaguely recall saying on this podcast, which means it was unfortunately recorded, that an outside chance of the playoffs wasn't kind of out of the question. Turns out that wasn't the case, but there was a bit of optimism there, and I enjoyed it for a very, very brief moment.
Right, our next category is one brimming with possibilities. Worst performance of the season, Paul. Which of the many have you picked?
Well, again for different reasons. It was really hard to pick one, wasn't it? I feel like this is going to be like we're dipping our toe in a pool of misery yet again, but there's no real way around it, is there? The worst game of the season, I can't remember which game it was. I might actually change my mind from the one I did, but maybe the worst moment of the season was when Joe Lolley did his hamstring because he was just coming back from injury and starting to look like his old self again a little bit. And that kind of quashed any kind of hope that Forest could find any attacking threat this season in that moment when he did his hamstring. So yeah, I'll go with that. The moment Joe Lolley's season was ended and kind of any hope of Forest having any attacking threat seemed to die with it.
Speaking of a lack of attacking threat, my worst performance was Reading away, although that wasn't the biggest issue that day. You had the comedy red card for Ryan Yates, Bruce Samba going for a wander, two shots on target at what I think we would all agree is one of the very worst places to watch football, even if you're not actually in the stadium, the Mad Stad. Nick, which did you go for?
It is quite tough to beat Reading away for kind of sheer slapstick, but I another sort of worthy candidate is Huddersfield at home, which is a few weeks ago. That was a real low point, if only because we'd spent a lot of time on the previous podcast talking about how this was a game between a team that didn't concede us and a team that didn't score them, cue 2-0 defeat. Which it's just a sort of, I know we didn't need any evidence that this has been a grim old season where Forest's weaknesses have been cruelly exposed, but that was a real kind of, you know, sort of hammering the point home with a very large mallet.
This will cheer us up a bit. Player of the season, Paul, I was not surprised at your pick because it's somebody who you've been banging the drum for many months on this show.
I have to say that there were three or four candidates here, and had Joe Worrell played more games, or even Ryan Yates played more games, or very definitely Garner played more games, they would very definitely have been in contention. But I just thought Cyrus Christie, maybe I'm swayed by the fact that he did have such a bad start and that seemed to turn fans against him. But after that bad start, he has been the most consistent player in the Forest side for probably 40 of the 44 games that he's played. He's done pretty well. He's not been as good as Matty Cash. He's certainly not the best right back to have played for the club in recent years. But in the perspective of a season that's been very, very poor, he's been probably Forest's most consistent player, so I think he probably deserved it.
Yeah, it's a well-argued case. I went for Joe Worrell, as did Ian on Twitter. Nick, you went for the other popular pick here.
Yeah, although I went with James Garner just because he's been so good since he came in. I don't think it sort of enormously matters that he's only been here for half a season, less than half a season maybe. He's just been so good. Although obviously if anyone from Manchester United is listening to this, that was all that was all lies. He's terrible, get rid of him, release him now, you know, etc. and so on.
He's the one player that's consistently delivered like ooh moments, isn't he? Yeah. He's the one player that's made you sort of feel like there was something worthwhile for watching Forest for, just in case he came up with another pass like the one he produced at Wickham for Joe Lolley. Just like real almost sexy football without sounding too much like Rude Hullet. He's just brilliant. I love him. And it'd be great to see him back, wouldn't it?
Yeah, we're definitely all hoping for that. I don't know how realistic that hope is, but we can just keep our fingers crossed. He features in our Best Goal Award. Mark, via Twitter, has gone for the goal that Garner scored against Preston this weekend, just past. Gareth also chipped in with that one. Paul, you've gone for another of your favourite Forest players here in this particular category.
I feel like there's a slightly judgmental tone there. Maybe I'm wrong. One of your favourites. I like it for the build-up as much as anything. Sammy Amiobi exchanged just this wonderful little 1-2 with Alex Mighton, who is another one of those players who's been one of few to deliver a few positive moments this season. I'm really excited about seeing him next season. Now he could link up with, you know, the likes of Brennan Johnson and one or two other, you know, hopefully if they can bring a few other, Joe Lolley can get back, then have a real attacking threat for Forest. We don't know if Sammy Amiobi is still going to be here next season. It doesn't feel like they're particularly busting a gut to get him tied down to a new contract. But yeah, that goal was just lovely. It was an epitome of what Sammy's capable of, just playing a 1-2 with Alex Mighton and then curling a shot beyond the keeper inside the far post. It was a lovely goal, and you just wish he'd do it more often. He's one of those players that can go from being Premier League to Sunday League in the space of the same game, but that was definitely a Premier League moment.
Yeah, it was a great goal. And Nick, I'd forgotten about the one that you picked, but that was pretty special too.
Yeah, Glenn Murray against the away game against Wickham, partly because I absolutely love a lob, and there's something even more aesthetically pleasing about the sort of lob that just goes over the keeper. There is kind of enough of a kind of, the keeper thinks he's got a chance of saving this. I don't know, maybe it was a trick of the camera angle, and I don't know how close the keeper was to actually getting it, but I also picked it because I had spent the previous couple of weeks harumphing that signing him was a complete waste of time and we shouldn't bother, he's 37, he's not scored any, didn't score any goals at Watford, etc. and so on. I always find it quite nice to be put in my place with something like that, even if it, you know, did turn out to be more or less the only game that he did anything of much note in.
Yeah, I think you won the real quiz there, to be fair. I've gone for best Forest goal of the season, Lukas Jukovic's late winner for Birmingham at Derby last month.
Oh, Birmingham have scored. And it's Lukas Jukovic again at the back post.
Oh, that is a dagger to the heart.
Your commitment to the pettiness is really, really quite encouraging. Just quickly on Sami Amiobi, I'm quite sort of... I always wonder whether my affection for him is kind of partly informed by the fact that I'm not there for every game. So when he does something good, then I'm more likely to see it. But I'm encouraged by the fact that someone who is there for every grim old minute of the season is with me as well.
Plenty of grim old minutes this season. What about a moment of the season? Paul, your choice shows just how slim the pickings were in this category.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember what it was.
Win at Blackburn.
Well, it was either that. I think my James Garner loving was also involved in that answer as well, wasn't it? Where, you know, the moment that he signed was probably the best moment of the season. But in terms of what actually happened on the pitch, yeah. Again, without stealing Nick's kind of point of view too much, in the moment that Joe Lolley scored a slightly fortunate deflected winner in injury time at Blackburn to get that first win of the season, I think we're all wrapped up in a sense of optimism and hope that Houghton would come in and sort of turn everything round and make everything okay again in a matter of moments. And as we know, it didn't quite turn out that way. But for those few brief seconds at Ewood Park after he'd scored that goal, you just thought, right, here we go. Season started. Let's get climbing up the table. And it didn't turn out that way, but at least we're allowed to enjoy that fleeting moment of hope and optimism just for a few hours on the way back from Blackburn.
We'll always have Ewood Park. I've gone pretty route one with this one and just gone for the announcement that Chris Houghton had been appointed manager because I thought, well, we won't get relegated in that case. And also, he just seems like a decent man. And you know, we've spoken about stuff that goes on behind the scenes and maybe how that reflects on Forrest quite badly. But having some sort of sensible, affable, personable human being as the face of the club is never a bad thing. Nick, can you improve on that?
Starting the Two Stars podcast, that was my favourite moment of the year.
Aww.
Sweet. I mean, otherwise I would entirely agree with Matt appointing Houghton, partly because we knew we weren't going to go relegated, partly because he's a decent human being. And also, I think me and Matt have kind of loosely discussed this at some point. It's the second manager in a row that he's a manager of colour. I don't know whether that's something to be proud of, and it presumably wasn't a kind of a direct reason for his appointment by the club. But I think it is something to be proud of when there are so few black managers out there. I think it's quite sort of encouraging or something to be proud of that Forrest have had a couple.
Yeah, definitely agree with that. And of course, he's got Stephen Reid as part of his backroom staff as well. Worst moment of the season. I mean, take your pick, really. Paul, you've gone for one of the three trips to South Wales this season.
Yes. It wasn't perhaps the worst defeat of Forest season, but it was the one that best encapsulated why they've been a bit pants. You know, they had chance after chance. I think Knockhart hit the bar. Lewis Graben had really good chances. Joe Lolley had as well. Forest actually played better than Swansea and deserved not just a draw, but maybe even to win the game. But instead of that, Connor Roberts, the 5'6" or 5'7" towering colossus, managed to yet again rise at the far post to head home a late winner for Swansea. And, you know, that kind of summed up Forest season better than anything, I think. You know, play well, create chances, don't put them away, lose. That if there was a headstone for this season, that would be what would be written upon it.
Nick, I think you've picked the right answer here.
Yeah, I probably should pick one of the very many defeats and on-pitch low points, but I think my worst moment of the season was about 15 minutes into the chairman's powerfully tedious Q&A on YouTube and just thinking, what am I doing with my life? Why am I watching this? Also, you know, on the kind of 12th or 13th signing of last summer, when you kind of thought, my God, they actually aren't going to stop signing players, aren't they?
I remember there was a point in the first part of that Q&A, I was listening to it in the office where I'm sat now, and I thought, oh, is that a blackbird or a starling I can hear outside? And yeah, that kind of tells you how it's going. I've gone pretty straightforward again here, quite simply sacking Sabri Lamouchi in October rather than at the end of the season. We were fond of him. He was a stylish monsieur, I think that we'd all agree, and he did a good job for the first two-thirds of last season, but you could see what was going to happen after that Stoke game. It would have been ruthless, but it would have been the right thing to do to have sacked him at that point. And who knows how the season might have panned out differently had they have done so. Here's a fun question. A couple of more lighthearted ones to finish. Most likely to feature in a future episode of Did They Really Play for Forest? Were we ever to resurrect that particular feature? Nick, you've picked somebody who's already been in this feature, as far as I remember.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I forgot about that. So is that disqualified? Well, I mean, it has to, surely Foa Basharu is the answer here. I mean, how much did he actually play in the first team in the end? It was about an hour, 45 minutes, something
he
like
played
that?
Played
Swansea in the cup, didn't he?
Yeah.
Definitely.
Well,
Barnsley on the opening day, I think.
The man who kind of, you know, was... I seem to remember, Paul, you saying that he was the signing that Lamucci was most optimistic about.
Yeah,
kind of,
yeah, he felt he was going to be the replacement for Ben Watson. As it turned out, he just left another void the size of Ben Watson somehow. I don't know.
Well, much like Ben Watson, he hasn't played for Forest this season. So.
Exactly, yes. They have something in common.
That glorious 90 minutes on his debut in the League Cup defeat at Barnsley, the first half in a 5-1 loss at Swansea in the FA Cup, and then on for a 58-minute cameo in his only Championship appearance. I went for Nicholas Ioannou, who, by the way, has got 3 years left on his contract. Paul, can you add another name into the mix from the current crop of losers?
It's got to be Harry Arter, hasn't it? You know, I would have said Basharu, but, you know, we're not short of choices, so we can spread it around. I was actually optimistic when he signed. He's got a good background, a good pedigree, had just won promotion. I thought he was going to be decent, but for whatever reason, probably nothing more complex than the fact he was the 227th central midfielder added to the squad. He's never quite done it. It's all a bit sad. Can they move him on in the summer? Can he find somewhere to go and play regular football? You kind of hope so, because it doesn't feel like it's going to happen for him here, but he will very firmly be included in the annals of did he really play for Forest at some point in the future. So I'm going to swat up on his background, just in case.
Who is it? Is it Scott Parker? He's the brother-in-law of, isn't it? There you go. There's one of
these
clues.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
This has been a fairly sad feature, so let's finish with some positives and reasons to be cheerful. A couple of you have chipped in on Twitter here, so we'll start with those. Ian says, with his experience, knowledge and contracts, Chris Hughton might be able to find a replacement for Ben Watson. We can but hope. Adam, Might and Carvalho and Johnson behind a new young striker terrorising defences. That would be lovely. Mark says, Chris Hughton's recruitment and a full season in charge. Change of senior leadership at club with experienced people being brought in. Finally, Derby's pantomime drawing attention away from Forest, allowing a promotion charge. Yeah, we're all here for that. And Gareth also chipped in with the reason to be cheerful. Got a couple of months without having to watch them. Nick, young players featuring in your reason to be cheerful, I see.
Yeah, Alex Mighton, Brennan Johnson, Jordan Gabriel, you know, a couple of other lads that are coming through. There's also the hope that Chris, we've been saying it for most of the season, but the hope that Chris Hughton can kind of replicate what he did at Brighton. It, you know, in theory, phase one of that is now kind of complete, you know, keeping things a bit more solid, pushing on for next season. And a slightly more sentimental one, just the prospect of being able to go back to games as a supporter, going back to games with my mum and dad, as I have been doing since 1989. This will probably be, I think, will almost certainly have been the first season that I haven't been to a Forest game as a supporter. Managed to get to one game, which was Luton, which I think was the last time we saw Nicholas Ioannou. You know, he got sent off in that game, didn't he?
Yeah.
But yeah, just being able to go and kind of there's something incredibly comforting about the kind of autopilot of walking through we have to go through the same turnstiles in the Brian Clough stand and, you know, queue up for a dreadful burger or, you know, cup of tea or something like that, and then go in the same entrance, to the to our seats, Brian Clough upper stand, block L, row 6. It's making me feel very sentimental and, you know, vaguely optimistic for the future.
What I would say, Nick, I know it's quite a long walk from the Brian Clough stand, but if you come round to where the club shop is and just go up, back up toward Trent Bridge, there is a cracking cob shop there which does pork and stuffing with applesauce, which you would not believe. Swap that for the burger, it will change your life. Paul, can you give us a reason to be cheerful?
Well, you're making me hungry now. All I'm thinking about is having a...
They really are superb. Yeah, you must check them out.
The pre-match meat pie might be back on the menu for us fat lads in the press box as well. So that would be a bonus if that turns out to be true. I think I've got to be with Nick, really, in terms of the young players. Just the thought of seeing Brennan Johnson in particular, you know, he's been out on loan, he's done it, he's shown what he can do with Lincoln. Really had a very, very good season. Got a lot of admirers. There's clubs in the Premier League looking at him very, very seriously indeed. Hopefully he'll... I don't think there's any immediate rush to move him on if there's a thought there that he is going to get a chance, and hopefully he will, because just having him in that, you don't think that Chris Hughton's going to change formation. He's going to stick with the way he's always played throughout his you know, football career. It'll either be a 4-2-3-1 or a perhaps slightly looser 4-1-4-1. But Brennan would fit into that. He could play on the left side. He can play in a central role. It'd be great to see him and Alex Mighton, you know, terrorising championship defences next season. And just more broadly, the sense that there is an opportunity for Chris Hughton to really stamp his influence on things this season. What, it hasn't been a good season. It's been poor. It's been, even taking into account, you know, the mess he took on, he could have done a better job. He could have done more than he did. But this summer, he'll have the chance to bring in his players, get the players that can fit within the system he likes, do the job he likes, and hopefully that's the thought that gives me optimism and hope that next season could be better. I know we wipe the slate clean and start again every summer. I know there's a reset button pressed, hammered somewhere in the City Ground every single summer, but this year it feels like they've got the right man at the teller just to help build something, give the team an identity for the first time in a very long time. They had it a little bit under Sabri Lamouchi, but since then, Hughton hasn't had the chance to give the team that identity that he's so good at doing in the past at his previous clubs. And hopefully we can see that next season. A Forest team with identity, purpose, a direction, and hopefully, dare I say it, a plan.
It's not much to ask, is it? All I would add is the only way is up. This has been the worst season that we've had since relegation to League One. And a massive part of that has been the absence of supporters. So it's got to be better next time round. Also, Gary Brazil still works for Forest, so that's always good. Right, we're almost done for the season. But for the last time ever, it's time for this. Yes, it's Did They Really Play for Forest? Nick gives us a series of difficult clues about a Forest flop, and we have to try and decipher who they are. I'm looking forward to this, Nick. Given that it's the last one, I'm expecting that you've gone balls out the bath on this one.
Yeah, really. I mean, I'm afraid it is going to have to be the last one, because I have really been scraping the barrel for some of these. But yeah, final one. So if anyone is coming to this very, very late, it's a notable player that played for Forest in a otherwise forgettable spell. Five clues, starting with the most difficult, finish up with the easiest. So clue number one: I started my career in France, but I'm not French.
Okay. It sort of does narrow it down quite a bit, because, you know, historically Forest don't have that many foreign players. Mm. So who might start in France who's not French? I'm trying to think of any. Okay, all right, I've got a random guess, Paul, have you?
No.
I'm going to say Michael Heffler.
That is not correct, although I see where you were going with that. Clue number two: I played once for Manchester City.
Okay, so maybe this was, I don't know, somebody with some sort of Stuart Pearce link. I'm scratching my head. Paul, you look equally puzzled.
Yeah, I've really got nothing. You have finished off with a stinker here. Mm. Which feels quite fitting, to be fair.
I really am going to miss that baffled face. Paul, if it's a close season, can we just kind of FaceTime and I ask you?
Just ask me difficult questions, like
what's the
atomic number of plutonium or something? And
Okay. Any guesses, or shall I move on to clue number three? Okay, clue number three. As far as the internet knows, I retired in 2016, aged just 30.
Ooh. Right, so one would assume that would be because of injury. This is really, really difficult.
This is the first time in a long time I haven't had a single player's name in my head, and I haven't got a single one. I
think where I've always struggled with this, Paul, is you fixate on one clue. So now I'm looking in my mind for somebody who played for Manchester City once, as if I'm ever going to be able to think of that. Retired at somebody 30.
French roots who played once for Man City. Mirage? Okay.
No. Oh. There's good logic there, but no.
Matricano?
No. No, he would be about 60 in 2016, surely.
No, of course, Mirage hasn't even retired, has he? What am I talking about? So there we are, focusing on one clue again.
All right, well, the first three clues have been pretty fiendish, but the last two clues, these are two sort of clue number ones. I'll be very surprised if you don't get it from this one. I scored two goals for Forest, one of which was a Panenka penalty.
Oh, here we go. Did he play for Man City?
Yeah,
go on, Paul, you take it. He's your guy.
Is it the man with big balls?
It's the man with big balls.
Jamal Abdoun.
And as it happens, the final clue was, I once bragged to the Athletic's Nottingham Forest correspondent Paul Taylor about the size of my genitals.
And his father's genitals. And, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I would thoroughly... It was around this time last year, I think, wasn't it? You wrote a piece about him. I thoroughly recommend it.
Yes.
I don't know whether it's the Athletic's SEO team have done a bang-up job in getting it up the Google rankings, or just no one is searching for Jamal Abdoun, but just search for his name, and it's one of the first things that comes up.
Jamal Abdoun and big balls, and it'll be there immediately.
How did that come up in conversation?
The whole story is brilliant. I was just stood in reception at the Forest training ground, and the press officer said to me, somebody wants a word with you. And it was a clearly furious Jamal Abdoun. He was absolutely livid. Now, Jamal, thankfully, is not the biggest of guys. And I thought to myself, well, look, I didn't genuinely think we were going to have a fight or anything like that. But I said to him, look, let's go outside, away from everybody else. And I thought, I'll try and calm him down. And because he just wanted to know why I was writing bad things about him. The fact I was writing bad things about him was because he was playing badly. but yeah, we went outside and he was giving it the old chest jab. And I'm thinking, here we go. Right, okay. I'm getting a jab in the chest. Then he went on this extraordinary rant that went on for a good 7 or 8 minutes, I would imagine, where I barely got a word in edgeways, where he just talked about the size of his balls, his dad's balls, his father giving him big balls and how big balls were important. And he played for Olympiacos, which shows he'd got big balls. And did I have big balls? There was a moment where I thought he was going to reach out and assess for himself whether I had big balls or not. But yeah, eventually with reason and calmness, thankfully, I managed to calm him down. I think it would have been one of those situations where you could comfortably have just held him off with one arm, but still, I didn't really want to have to go down that, having him flailing fists at me in a furious way.
Paint a picture of a man who's disproportionately made up of testicles. He's got big balls, and the rest of his body is kind
bust,
of very...
Bust a gonad.
Yeah, exactly.
But by the end of it, we ended up on quite good terms, and for a while he used to message me and promise me an interview and things after he'd left Forest, which was interesting. I wish we'd done that. I guess it's never too late, but it would be great to go over again with him what he made of his Forest career, because his side of the story must be extraordinary. You know, my favourite, I tell the story of the piece of Dougie Friedman told me that Jamal Abdoun came and knocked on his door and gave him a big speech about how he was the best player at the club and should be playing. And Dougie thought, well, fair enough, if you really think that, you go and tell the other players that. And apparently he did. He went down to the dressing room, stood up in front of the other players and went, I'm the best player at this club and I should be playing. Which you can imagine the reaction from his teammates being one of bewilderment and amusement. But still, at least he very much did demonstrate that he has got big balls to go and do that. So fair play to him.
He was one of those players who when you first watched him, he had a little kind of shuffle that vaguely reminded me of Robert Pires. And for a fleeting moment, I thought, what if he's as good as Robert Pires? Well, we might have a real player on our hands here. And then he carried on playing, and as it turns out, he wasn't as good as Robert Pires.
What an extraordinary way to bring the curtain down on the glory that was Did They Really Play for Forest. We'll come back with a similarly thrilling feature next season, I've got no doubt. But that's just about going to wrap it up for today and for this season. Before we go there, let's hear what the chaps have been working on for Athletic subscribers to enjoy. Paul, your editors have stitched you up, haven't they? Making you write about the playoffs. A bit cruel.
Yes. It's like, here's what you could have won. But yeah, we've done a big look at every single one of the Championship, League One and League Two playoff games. And it's one of those niche features that has immediately prompted outrage from the fans of every single one of those clubs, telling me how wrong I've got the choice of key player. You know, forgive me for not watching all 46 games of Sunderland season so far, but, you know, I'm looking forward to the playoffs because they're exciting, aren't they? They're great when you're not involved and you can sort of stand and watch as a neutral and see, you know, whether, you know, the likes of Barnsley are going to continue their fairy tale season and end up in the Premier League, or whether Sunderland are finally going to end their misery in League One. Or there's just so much intrigue and drama and excitement. And they quite often end up being utterly rubbish games, but still somehow are entertaining just purely because of what's at stake. I love it. I love the playoffs, and I'll be watching every single one of the games like a right saddo with a beer on the sofa, wishing that Forest were involved, but hopefully next season.
And that actually gives me the chance to plug something, which is the Totally Football League show. We're doing a playoff preview special, which we'll record on Sunday. But later today, I'm talking to Michael Appleton, the Lincoln City manager. And, you know, I'm sure I'll try and crowbar something about Brennan Johnson in there. So do check that out. How about you, Nick?
Most of my time is currently consumed, as I mentioned a couple of times before, with the Totally Football Yearbook, which gave Matt a little sneak preview of the Forest, very brief Forest section, and he was thoroughly depressed by it all. So fortunately, there was about 400 other pages of stuff about the season just gone. It's not out until August, but get pre-ordering that now. In terms of something else, something more immediate to plug, nothing really to do with Forest, but there have been a couple of exceptional pieces on The Athletic by Katie Wyatt about Chelsea women's team. First was about the Champions League semi-final, I think, or written just after that, and she wrote a profile of Emma Hayes, which went out earlier this week, I think, which is one of the best pieces of writing I've read in some time. So have a read of those.
And Emma Hayes, by the way, a big disciple of the Brian Clough School of Management. And she spoke about how massive a thrill it was for her to play the Women's League Cup final at the City Ground last season. So well worth checking that out. We will come back sporadically, listener, if something big happens in the world of Forest over the summer. But this is our final show until we start building up toward next season. So many thanks to Paul, to Nick, to producers Lucy, Adie and Adonis, to Danny Taylor, to David Prutton, to Arsha Ali, to all the guests we've had on, but mainly to you for keeping us going and sustaining us. We will be back again next season as we look forward to Forest's promotion winning campaign. But for now, from all of us here, it's goodbye.
The Athletic.